Today's the day that laws passed by the Missouri General Assembly in this year's session become effective. Some of them have a broader impact than others, but everyone is subject to these new laws, of course. Joining me in studio to discuss some of those that will have significant impact are members of our St. Louis Public Radio news staff. Erica Hunzinger is our politics, education, and criminal justice editor. Political reporter Jason Rosenbaum is with me in studio. Joining us by phone is our State House reporter, Marshall Griffin. Thank you all so much for being with us. Nice to have you.
Thank you.
Marshall,
let me start with you. We were just talking about this off the air. Perhaps you know the answer to the question. Why August 28th? Why is this the date in Missouri to implement these laws?
It's just written into the Constitution and has been for a long time. Now, there are exceptions, of course. When a bill writer, whether it's in the House or the Senate, wants something to take place sooner than that or on a different date, they can specify January 1st, or they can ask for an emergency clause, which would cause the bill to become law the moment it's signed. But it's just constitutionally mandated that it's on the 28th of August every year. It's been that way for a very long time.
And it's different in other states, Erica. I mean, every state does it a little bit differently.
That's correct. Yeah.
Yeah, right. Any thoughts about that, Jason?
It's just the way it is in Missouri. I don't have anything else to add besides that.
This was not the most productive session that the Missouri legislature has had, Marshall, with only about 50 or so laws being enacted today.
Well, I guess productivity is in the eye of the beholder, you could say. I talked to Mike Kehoe months ago, back when the session was still going on, and asked him that question. You know, there's very few bills. A lot fewer bills that have made it to the governor's desk or have made it through the process than normally would this time of year. And he said, well, that's actually a good thing. That means we're regulating people's lives a lot less. So he was definitely trying to play it off as a positive, you know. I would say before Eric Greitens was governor, on average, there were maybe anywhere from 110 to 140 bills that made it to former Governor Jay Nixon's desk. And most of them got signed or were allowed to become law. Of course, there were a lot that got vetoed. But yeah, there was definitely a significant fewer amount. I think maybe a total of 76 bills, resolutions, and other pieces that made it out this year.
Well, let's talk about some of those pieces of legislation that have the most impact. Eric, I'll start with you because we'll start with one that is not going to have any impact. A big one. The first one out of the box early in this session, Right to Work.
That's not happening. That's correct. Greitens signed it in February. It was supposed to take effect today. However, it's about 2 weeks ago, union leaders turned in 310,000 petitions to the Secretary of State's office. Those petitions were to force a statewide vote to have everyone in the state decide whether this right to work law should be in effect. So you only need about 100,000 petitions.
That's right.
To be done to make sure to get the law suspended. Obviously, with 310, that's a lot. They're still counting them, so they're still trying to verify all the signatures. That said, this means that, come November 2018, the entire state gets to vote on whether unions should have open shops. Essentially, you cannot force everyone who joins a certain union shop to be a union member.
That's what the right to work is. It occurs to me, and I've read this also, that the legislature may have outsmarted itself by passing this so early in the session because it gave the opponents such additional time to work on those petitions.
Lots of time.
They had half a year.
Yes, definitely.
That's one way of putting it, but you could also make the argument that had they passed it later, then unions would have actually pursued a constitutional amendment banning right to work from ever happening in Missouri. What this referendum would do, if it's successful, is repeal right to work, but there would be nothing to stop the legislature from coming back in subsequent years and doing it again in a different form.
Although
perhaps.
If you do, Joe Manis has done a lot of reporting on this, and she notes that just because there is a statewide referendum coming, the lawmakers themselves could go ahead and just pass a new one after the 2018 vote. And unions are also kind of looking at putting a constitutional amendment.
Right.
On the 2018 ballot as well. So you might have two right to work things on the same ballot.
It would be tough for the legislature to come back, though, and just write another law once the public has voted against what they had previously done.
But they've done it before. They did that with dog breeding operations after the public approved pretty strict regulations on dog breeding. The legislature came back the following year and essentially eviscerated those regulations, and they also did that on campaign donation limits several times.
Yeah. Well, let's go over some of these other pieces of legislation that are important. Marshall, I'll come back to you on the workplace discrimination law, which I'm not sure that everybody fully understands. It's a little bit complicated, isn't it?
It is, and if it was so complicated that a lot of the lawmakers had trouble making some of the sense of it, and others saying, you know, this thing is thrown together pretty fast and has some confusing language. Even some Republicans were opposing it that normally would have supported workplace discrimination because of the concerns about what it might do for healthcare workers who don't want to take part in an abortion. That was something that some of the Republicans, the few Republicans that opposed it, latched onto that. But as we all know, it did become law. Basically, what this says is that it makes it harder for a fired worker to prove that discrimination happened if they lose their job. Basically, they have to now prove that it was the main reason they were fired, as opposed to one of the reasons that might have contributed to their firing. And one of the things that a lot of people were upset about is that this would also limit lawsuits to the company and not to the actual individual within that company who may have done the harassment or may have committed acts of discrimination. That person is now shielded, and only the company that that particular supervisor would be employed for can be sued, not the supervisor himself or herself.
But the main point is that race has to be determined as the explicit motivation for dismissal.
Yes, race, gender, age, national origin, yes.
One of the things that we've been reading most recently is the fact that this particular piece of legislation may be the reason that the NAACP put out its travel advisories advising people of color not to be traveling through Missouri.
Well, the state director, the state president of the NAACP says definitely so. Rod Chappell also told me that they have no intention of withdrawing the travel advisory until the issues of racial discrimination and discrimination against other groups are addressed in law and also in civil cases.
Let's move on to minimum wage, which is getting a lot of attention today. As well it might here in the city of St. Louis, where a lot of people, Jason, are looking at maybe having their hourly wage cut back. Not necessarily, but could.
It depends on the business, because a number of businesses have voluntarily said that they are going to keep their minimum wage at least $10 an hour. But the law you're referring to effectively bans cities from being able to raise minimum wages above the state average within their border, and also essentially throws out any laws that have already been done by a city. So, for example, in St. Louis, they passed an ordinance a long time ago, two years has been a long time, that raises the minimum wage in St. Louis to $11 an hour by next year. And they'd already raised the minimum wage to $10 earlier this year. So the city will no longer be able to enforce that law requiring businesses to keep it at $10. And for some, that may mean that their paychecks will literally shrink after today.
We've been hearing pieces on the radio today of people saying that they're behind in their rent already, and now that this is cut, if it's cut back in their particular case, they're looking at eviction and, you know, all sorts of horror stories like that.
It definitely has a human impact. Even if it's a situation where somebody wasn't making $7.70 an hour, where they were making $8 or $9, mm-hmm. if they're trying to make ends meet, and especially if they have children, a cut by a dollar or two is a pretty big deal for them. Not having the extra $50 or $100 a month could be the difference between paying rent and being able to pay for their groceries. So there's no doubt that this is going to affect people in potentially negative ways.
Puts the employer between a rock and a hard place, doesn't it? Because it's very, very tough to cut back wages.
I think so, because I think that there's going to be genuine employer dissatisfaction if they went into work on Friday and their wage was $10 an hour and they come in on Monday or Tuesday and it's down to $8. So I think that's why a lot of businesses throughout the St. Louis area, many of them are smaller businesses. I want to make that clear. Some of the larger ones are not going along with this voluntary movement. But I think that's why a lot of smaller businesses are keeping their wage at $10 an hour above, because they want to be able to retain and recruit good employees. And they feel like if they didn't, they're going to lose them.
Let's move along to what's being called the Real ID Law. Erica, we'll go to you on this one. It's kind of stumbling its way into a reality, isn't it?
Because In Missouri, certainly. Well, this is a federal mandate back from 2005. Now, federal mandate being a mandate for federal institutions, state participation has always been voluntary, but under the Real ID Law, if you don't have a license that is kind of, they call it like an enhanced license, these are meant to kind of keep from terrorism. This is back from 9/11. So if you don't have one of these licenses by the time January 2018 rolls around, you won't be able to get on an airplane unless you're using a passport or a different kind of government ID. You can't get onto certain military or all military bases, and you also won't be able to get into most federal facilities without it.
Does this mean we can't get to Reykjavik, perhaps, on WOW Airlines?
Well, hopefully you'll have your passport if you're going overseas. But yeah, any kind of domestic travel, you won't be able to board a plane without it.
What is the enhancement?
That's a good question. Yeah. I wish I could answer that. Maybe Jason or Marshall know.
I think it's basically you have to turn over certain documents that confirm your identity. I don't know exactly what the difference between a non-real ID
non-compliant
is.
Yeah.
But there are differences. Marshall can maybe elaborate on that.
Go ahead, Marshall.
It is a large part of the documentation that you have to use. And the only way they were able to get this through both the Senate and the House was to guarantee that the documentation used for this would not go into a federal database. It has to be kept in a state-run database that has no internet access, period. It's almost like literally putting it in a locked box, and that's the only way they were able to get this to Greitens' desk.
But do we know what our driver's license will look like that's different from what we have in our pockets right now?
Not yet. And I've been calling the Department of Revenue for several weeks now, just trying to get some word on the process. All I got back was a written statement saying that it will probably take a total of 18 months to get all of their protocols in place. And because of that, it's 2019 is probably when it will be fully in effect, and they'll be able to crank out real ID compliant driver's licenses on a full regular basis. And because of that, I was able to talk to the sponsor of the bill over the phone. Representative Kevin Corlew said that the state is going to try to apply for an extension so that we could still use our regular driver's licenses for IDs at the airports after January 2018. He thinks the federal government will probably grant that extension request because we passed the bill this year and Greitens signed it. But it hasn't happened yet, but they're fairly comfortable that they will be able to get another extension, and perhaps Missourians will still be able to fly with a regular driver's license after January 2018.
Okay, once again, they'll be able to get to Reykjavik with less difficulty. While we're talking
or
about
Rochester.
Pardon?
Or Rochester.
All right. Okay, point taken. Let's move on to another issue that relates to airlines, and that is now that we can carry our drinks around in the various carousels as we're waiting for our flights. People are making a big deal out of this. Is it a big deal?
Sure. I mean,
I was at the airport
on Friday, and I had an adult beverage before I went to Austin, Texas. And would I have liked to carry that beverage outside the bounds of the Chili's? I probably would have been yelled at since it was a glass. But I could imagine some people being happy, because there's often some very stringent regulations inside of airports. Things already seem overpriced as it is. This may make the travel experience a little bit better, especially if you're delayed.
But it's important to note that it's only at Lambert and at KCI, meaning if you're in Springfield or Branson,
you're out of luck.
Another one that is getting a lot of attention, particularly in these age of police shootings and violence on the streets, is the Blue Alert System, Marshall. That basically is going to ostensibly make make it safer for the men in blue on the streets, men and women in blue on the streets.
Well, that is the intention. Basically, it would work similar to an Amber Alert, where if someone were to shoot or assault a police officer, certain alerts would go out immediately, which the design of which is to be able to catch a suspect a lot quicker than normal. Now, there's been some concerns and complaints about setting up a blue alert system that it could, and Jason definitely touched on this a few months ago, and that was the possibility of vigilantism, maybe somebody cornering the wrong person and assuming they were the police shooter, and something terrible happening to an innocent person.
Go ahead, Jane.
I think that's definitely a concern, because obviously whenever a police officer is shot or injured on the job, it's a very emotionally charged moment. I mean, that happened three blocks from my house when an officer was shot in St. Louis. And I think that the concern of the opponents of this is that it will just prompt somebody who's not a police officer to try and take the justice and law into their own hands. And that could include like taking out a gun and shooting that person. I think the proponents of this say that concern is overblown, and this could just help provide people a way to know and be on the lookout for somebody and then contact law enforcement themselves. I think that's definitely the intent. We'll have to see how the practice ends up.
There were some reports that Governor Greitens, in signing this legislation, wept as he did so. Marshall, Jason, Erica, do you know, was this in fact the case, and why?
I don't know anything about that.
No, don't know. Don't know.
All right.
I want to say that there was officers in there who maybe had someone shot. Or family members, I don't remember.
Yeah, there were, I think, several officers who had survived being shot in the line of duty. And I think that made the signing emotional for a lot of people.
Okay, time is winding down, but I want to talk about the prospect of us potentially having to vote on an increase in the sales tax in St. Louis City and St. Louis County to support the zoo. Erica, what do we know about this?
So there was a bill that was passed that will allow the Zoo Museum District to decide whether they want to put towards voters a one-eighth of 1 cent.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Increase that would go towards upgrading infrastructure at the zoo, which we all know has been around for a century or more. I mean, beloved, but already, we already pay taxes here in the city and the county. Property taxes.
Yes. And I do not believe this bill would allow for this to be put on in St. Charles County or Franklin or Jefferson County. And I think that there could be some angst, the fact that city and county residents already pay property taxes on this, and they're being asked to put another tax on what they already paid, whereas the surrounding counties aren't being asked to share the same burden. I think that there's language in the bill that would allow some new attractions to have a mission, so that may be kind of a way to soften that. But
they'd be off-site.
Yeah. And realistically, I don't think the zoo board is going to charge admission at this point. They like the fact that it's a quote-unquote free zoo, and I'm putting that in quotes because for city and county residents, it's not really free. But they like the fact that there's no admission, and it's one of the reasons it's such a well-attended attraction.
Only about a minute left, and we have an email from Bolivia here, which is a good question, and let's see who knows the answer. How does real ID affect traveling kids? Well, they too have to get a real ID.
I don't know the answer to that question.
That is a very good question.
I really don't know, because I don't think children are asked to show IDs.
As far as I know, it's the same thing stands with that. I believe it's just adults.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's my understanding as well.
Okay, well, we can find out, and we'll hope to get an answer for Olivia at some point. Very, very quickly, and I mean quickly, Uber and Lyft get an easier ride, if you will, I suppose now, with legislation that's being signed today. What's happening there, Jason, very quickly?
It basically makes ride-sharing services adhere to statewide standards as opposed to local standards. Ideally, it could allow somebody to take a Lyft or an Uber across a city line, which for a lot of people is a very convenient thing.
All righty. Well, that's a big issue. Big news national about Uber today with a brand new CEO, as I understand it. But that's another story for another day. Thank you all so much for being with us. Jason Rosenbaum, Erica Hunzinger, and Marshall Griffin, thank you for being with us. Now we know more about laws that have taken effect as of today. Thank you.
Thank you.
Archived versions of past St. Louis On the Air programs are available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org/stlonair. St. Louis On the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Thank you for listening. I'm Don Marsh.